Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, April the 18th, 2023, and you're listening to What's Happening with Ralph Pointer. And the call-in number is 347-857-3293. And as the Chinese said, the Chinese curse, we have been living through interesting times. And tonight we're saying the true meaning behind the instant motion to pardon the killer cop in Texas by Governor Abbott is our theme. And those of you who have been on for so many years, to whom we are grateful for your loyalty and your devotion to political prisoners, you know that this is a program dedicated to freeing our warriors who went down fighting for the freedoms that we have now. You know, this is an analysis and an anatomy of oppression. And the main oppression we deal with is colonialism. And everybody in their own way tonight will be revealing some form of this oppression. So we have a war to fight at home as well as abroad, and they are the same war. And that is why we honor political prisoners. So, Ralph Pointer, tonight, what's happening?
Good evening, my brothers and sisters, and thanks again for tuning in. And I want you to know that we do accept criticism. Now, I've been told many times that I say something off of the top of my head with thought, but I must go deeper into the subject to make people understand. And our theme tonight is the true meaning behind the instant motion to pardon the killer cop in Texas by Governor Abbott. The governor pardoned a Army of Occupation member who was called euphemistically police. He was found guilty after trial, and the moment the trial was over, the governor pardoned him. What was his crime? His crime was killing a defenseless demonstrator, and he was pardoned. Murder. Now, what is behind that? Well, one of the things we said on this program many months ago, the theme was the North won the Civil War, but the South did not lose the Civil War. And I'm going to try to get you up to speed as to what that means, what Sister Betty is talking about. We are living in interesting times, but I say, I change it. We are living in the most dangerous times of our lives. And things are building up, and we must understand the buildup. Now, we are going into states' rights that was brought to the fore by President ex-Governor Clinton. And what states' rights means, in the war between the North and the South, slavery, economy, the war was between free states, supposedly, in the North, against slave states in the South. And the states in the South, never mind that euphemism they use over and over again, that lie, that the South was fighting for the freedom of their way of life. Well, any so-called historian who uses that is lying. He's outright lying, because you can't use the word of freedom involved in slavery. The South was fighting for the right to maintain slavery regardless of freedom and democracy expressed in the beautiful documents written about American culture and American politics. Slavery, using one person's as an animal for another person's economic benefit. And we people of color have been the animals even before the inception of the American economic system. And so, what do we mean when we say the coming of states' rights? Well, we went from states' rights, the South lost, the North won the war, and the South became Dixocrats. That is, to have laws and regulations that would keep black people, ex-slaves, ex-captives, in slavery. That's what states' rights means. And nibbling at the Constitution little at a time, as folks of color, folks with progressive ideas, try to move the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, all of these laws forward on a national level. And in parts of the country, they are operating on states' rights. We know that the law is, if you're convicted, you have to go through a process. Governor Abbott says, forget the process. We don't need it. Clarence Thomas, a Supreme Court Justice, we know, and we had a whole program on him. Who put him there? It's all of these right-wing anti-progressive movements moving towards a period where there is states' rights and they can write the law as they see it. And every time they violate the law, we have to have a demonstration. We have to have political action. And I do hope when we have these political actions that it helps to teach people something, not just what happened in the instant moment, but what happens with these instances over a period of time. And when we wrote this out, and we tried to get subjects a few days ahead of time so people can tune in and have thoughts of them on their own, another incident happens. A young man knocks on the wrong door. When I say a young man, an 18-year-old, a kid, who was a star kid, beautiful young man with a future, knocked on the wrong door when he was looking to pick up some of his siblings. Why would his parents send someone to pick up the siblings? Because they're struggling as we all are. Everybody working day and night, two jobs, mother and father, if there is a mother and father. And so you send an older sibling to go pick somebody up from daycare. But he got terrace mixed up with street, just like Long Queens in New York here. You have terrace streets, etc., and they're different roads, and it's easy to get them mixed up because I still get them mixed up. He went to a door, knocked on the door. He was black, of course, and the homeowner opened the door with a gun, shot him twice, once while he was on the ground. I don't know whether he's dead as of yet, but the important thing is his life was extremely important. He was going someplace. He had a plan. He was working on it as an honor student. And it's over. And what's the significance of it? The police arrested him according to law and held him for 24 hours according to law. And they said they needed more evidence according to law. And after they released them, then the people came out and says, what do you need more with somebody who was shot twice for ringing a doorbell, for knocking on a door? What more do you need? Then, and only then, did the police re-arrest the man and put him in jail. And so this is what I'm talking about. It is so bad now, states' rights, that our rights as people are not taken for granted. What is taken for granted is that we have no rights. The young man laying on the sidewalk being shot twice had no rights. They say we need more evidence. And one of the things that we've been saying over the years, every time there's a situation like that, how about a dead body? Do you need more evidence than that? And those who practice states' rights say yes. And we go fast forward to our dear departed sister Lynn Stewart, the people's lawyer, who said bluntly and cleanly and clearly, the law is whatever they say it is at any given time. While we are in a period now where they make it up as they go, and we see so often now that those who kill people of color, it is no crime. That's why I say we're living in dangerous times. We have people who are the head of the government, and we have very little, if any, complaint against them. And our main complaint against them should be that we have political prisoners, people who acted on behalf of the downtrodden, and they are put in the death camps to die there. They are mistreated. And I forget the political prisoner who said, how do you know we're political prisoners?
Thank you.
And the answer is, they don't treat us the way they treat criminals. They treat us worse than they treat criminals. If you beat an old lady upside the head and steal her purse, that's not so bad. But if you do a political act, that is bad, and they take you through the ringer for that. And quite often, as Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. of Chicago Progressive People Organization says, there are many people who do political acts, but they're not political. And so we see political acts are done without understanding the nature of the act. And when I first got started in New York City in 1962, I did a political act. I said 60 to 70% of the children of New York City public schools are of color, and therefore the budget, 60 to 70% of that budget should be controlled by the people of color in the city. Very political act. That was just a good sense act, common sense act. It was political, and I've been in the doghouse from the system ever since. Because today we're talking about $37 billion, and we see with the economy going the way it's going, and I cannot take the time to go into that economy. I just tried to explain where we are, how dangerous we are, what times we're living in. And with that said, I have overstayed my time, and we'll have to go to our wonderful Professor Louis, who educates and entertains us at the same time. Professor Louis, your microphone is open. Help us out again one more time. Thank you, sir.
All right. Be all you can be. Do not be deceived, blind, and never see running down through the street, getting up, going to school, playing by the rules. Everybody thinks you're a fool. You might as well be cool. Shoot a little smack, get a little whack, try a little crack, never ever coming back. Smack in the alley, smack in the street, smacking your brains all over your feet and having no job, trying to rob, running with the mob like a piece of shish kebab on the corner, called nowhere, where nothing, nothing is fair, waiting for nobody and nobody cares. Drinking that wine, wasting that time, wondering when will I get mine. So you be all you can be. You joined the army. You flew across the sea to a far country, fighting for Uncle Sam, doing what you can, automatic rifle in your hand in a foreign land. Grenada, Nicaragua, Lebanon, Cuba, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, El Salvador. Who were you fighting for? But you were seeing the world, making it with the girls, open up all the doors, looking for all the whores. Yeah, smoking the finest grass, hoping your luck will last until it came to pass. Got a bullet in your ass, lay down in your grave, nothing left to save. Died so very young, spring had hardly sprung, and it didn't matter at all. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, the army is not small. They got someone else to call, and down on Wall Street, business was real neat. Profit was real sweet, offer your dead meat, huh? IBM, AT&T, the Rockefeller family, corporations laughed at your epitaph, and your mama cried, and your girlfriend sighed. All your friends came by, higher than high, and the preacher prayed for a better day. He had no better way. He had nothing to say. So your life went by, higher than high. There was nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. And the little kids on your block, they used to love you a lot. Grandpa and grandma, they never saw you no more. What was it all for? Dying so poor. Nobody makes it alone. We needed you at home. So be all you can be. Do not be deceived. Running down through the street, trying to be free, running down through the street, pushing to be free, running down through the street, reaching to be free, struggling to be free, struggling to be free, struggling to be free.
Well, thank you again, Professor Louis. That's what we do. We run down the street, tune in our computers. We struggle to be free. And with that, Sister Betty, we're going to listen to what other people have to say about this situation, this dangerous times that we live in. Sister Betty.
Well, as you know, Brother Ralph said his first act was to organize the community to overthrow colonialism in Harlem. And that's what colonialism is. It's your schools, it's your tax money, it's your children, you're 67% of the population, but the funds do not come back to you the way they do to other communities. Other communities have the jobs. Other communities, children get educated, and your children end up in jail if they're lucky. But we had political prisoners who fought for us, who went to jail for us, and that is why we call attention to this governor pardoning this army of occupation killer cop instantly. And Mamia Abu-Jamal is still in jail. And Ed Poindexter had his leg amputated to his knee because of medical neglect. And the list just goes on and on. So we're going to open up the mic of our comrade from New York City, Jericho, Sister Ann Lamb, who has faithfully over the years kept you informed about what to do to get our political prisoners out. Even John Hinckley, John Hinckley Jr., who tried to assassinate the commander-in-chief of this government, is out. And our companions and our warriors who stood on the front lines for us are still in. Sister Ann, your mic is open, and welcome back.
Oh, thank you so much, Sister Betty, Brother Ralph. Always an honor and a pleasure to be in your company, even if it's over the phone here. I just wanted to say to Ralph, that young man did not die. He's actually back home with his family, and he is improving, the one who got shot by that old white guy just for ringing his doorbell. So just so you know that, I agree, we are living in extremely dangerous times. Now, before I talk more about Ed, who you just mentioned, Ed Poindexter, just in case people don't know, and I'm sure people do know who listen to this program, but just in case you don't know, there's a thing called COINTELPRO, which is still around. They might call it something else, but they still do the same things. And we have three political prisoners for sure who we know for a fact were victims of COINTELPRO, one of whom is Ed Poindexter. Ed Poindexter has been in prison since 1971. Okay, that's 52 years for a crime he did not commit. And his co-defendant, Mondo, already died in prison of COPD. And everybody knows that this crime was not committed by either one of them. And there's a whole book about it written by Michael Richardson that people can read. So Ed, as you said, Sister Betty, recently had his left leg amputated below the knee. And this was found out by somebody who went to visit him. His family was not informed. His brother was not informed. His niece was not informed. So this is how they found out, that somebody went in on a visit. All right. Now, Ed has diabetes. He receives dialysis at least 3 days a week. It may be more. I have to verify that. And he also underwent triple bypass heart surgery in 2016. Not only that, but if you read about Ed on the JerichoMovement.com, you will see that this man has been an exemplary person throughout all these years. He has done all kinds of programs. He has mentored thousands and thousands of young people through the years. And he's really an exceptional human being. So one thing we're asking people to do is to write to Ed. So if you do write to Ed, and I'm not going to read all the addresses and stuff because they're up on our websites, Ed has a cataract in one eye, right? This makes it hard for him to read. So type your letter in at least 18-point type, because the Nebraska so-called Department of Corrections, does not plan to allow Ed to have surgery for the cataract because, quote-unquote, he has one good eye.
right? So this just shows you how these people are, you know. And I know for a fact I had a friend who had cataracts, had one removed, still had the other one, and was saying how difficult it was to see anything with still having the one cataract. So I know that that's really difficult for Ed. But I would encourage people to definitely write to Ed, you know, let him know, you know, that we feel for the fact that he lost his leg. You know, they were busy trying to blame it on him. You know, oh, well, you didn't change your socks often enough. Well, if you're in some kind of reception and treatment center for medical care, shouldn't you be changing his socks? Shouldn't you be helping him take a shower, et cetera, et cetera? I wouldn't even get into it. I am so infuriated by this. Anyway, there was this, we're putting in a call-in campaign that we want people to do from now until the end of May. And if you can do it every day, do it every day. So, you know, we really want to put the heat on these people in Nebraska. That's where Ed is. He's one of the Nebraska too, right? So we want people to call the warden. We want people to call the warden of the Nebraska State Penitentiary where he used to be. We want people to call the governor. We want people to call the director of the Nebraska docs. We want people to email the Nebraska Board of Pardons. And we have a little sample message that you can, you know, just copy and paste if you want. And you can also write to these folks. So we've included their addresses in case you might feel so inclined as to actually write a letter, which would be a wonderful thing. And we're working on putting up an online petition as well. But since it's just happened very recently, this is where we are now. So if you can, please take the time to write to Ed. 52 years of sacrifice. I mean, certainly he deserves a letter, right? And then make the phone calls to these folk. And we have a sample message you can read. It's very easy. You know, it just says, Ed Poindexter's family noticed blood on his feet several weeks ago. Then in April, his niece and brother found out that Ed's leg had been amputated earlier in the month. All of this happened without notifying Ed's family within the quote-unquote skilled nursing facility at the Reception and Treatment Center, which actually specializes in behavioral issues and suicide watch and is not primarily a rehab medical unit. So Ed is on dialysis several days per week, as I said, and is wheelchair-bound and is not able to shower or change without much more direct support than he is currently getting. The Nebraska docs admits that their facilities are severely overcrowded and understaffed. I, you can put your name in there, join Ed's family in demanding that Ed Poindexter, number 27767, be given a medical transfer to home hospice care where he will receive decent and humane health care from his niece, who I spoke with earlier today, by the way. So you can go to jerichoeny.org or the jerichomovement.com. It's on both websites, right on the front page. You can't miss it. And please take the time to, A, write to Ed. I think that's very important that he should get letters so he knows that people care about him, because we do care about him very much, and make those phone calls. We have to put the pressure on these people. You know, we've already talked about the ridiculousness of, you know, Governor Abbott, you know, trying to grant a pardon to somebody who hasn't even been convicted yet, you know, some white cop who killed somebody and said he was going to do that. So it was, like, intentional. And here's Ed, who never did anything, and he's been sitting in prison for 52 years, and not only that, he's now lost his lower left leg. And in addition to that, we have another victim of COINTELPRO, which is Leonard Peltier. Now, as people know, Leonard Peltier has been in prison for more than 46 years for a crime that he also did not commit and was initially convicted of killing two FBI agents, and then that was changed to aiding and abetting whoever killed the two FBI agents, which nobody knows who did that. So Amnesty International just put out an urgent call to Biden to grant clemency to Peltier. So I put a link up on jerichoeny.org so you can read the article. There's a petition you can sign. There's already more than 70,000 signatures. Go up and sign it, folks. And also, of course, call and write to President Joseph Biden and keep the heat on President Joseph Biden. Whether he'll do the right thing or not, we don't know, but we have to try. You know, Clinton didn't do it. Obama didn't do it. Trump didn't do it. okay? This man is also not in good health. He has this aortic aneurysm that if it bursts at any time, he will literally die. And he had COVID-19, and his health has not been very good ever since. So really, people, you know, this is an ongoing thing. COINTELPRO never ended. Ask the people at Cop City. They'll tell you. Now.
Well, thank you so much.
I will assume somebody else is going to talk about Mumia.
Yes, Gil is on.
We have several
Gil is on. We're going to let him report on Mumia. And Henry and Julia are on. Yes.
Oh, great. Fantastic.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much. What's the call? Free them all. You know,
and it's, if we don't care about our people, the system looks and they pay attention to how many people call and write. And if we don't get our numbers up, and that's the least we can do, please, my brothers and sisters, 1 minute in the death camps is 1 minute too long. Sister Betty.
All right, we're going to go to a special guest. We're going to take a slight detour this night. We have a call-in dealing with the, did you know that the there's a national union of the homeless? And so we're going to open the mic for 0380 from Chicago, and we're going to ask our comrade, it's 312, and the last four digits, 0380, would you please? And we have another comrade, we're going to open up their mics. And one of the things you should know, there's a book out. It's called Poverty by America. And it says that 11%, they admit 11% of the U.S. population, about 1 in 9 people, live below federal poverty line in 2021. There's plenty of poverty above the poverty line as a lived experience as well. And the book is by, I'm having a senior moment here, finding the author of the book, but it is Poverty by America. Desmond, his last name, he won the Pulitzer Prize. But the interesting thing about the facts for this book is that inequality in the United States, including housing segregation, predatory lending, the decline of unions, and tax policies favor the wealthy, and government policies are responsible for keeping people poor. And as Ralph was saying, our job is to fight against oppression. And so it is an honor to open up the mic for Joseph Peary, and a name that you will recognize if you know your history, the last name, Christopher Shuttlesworth. And we want to say you are welcome.
And we must remember the work that Christopher Shuttlesworth did in the 60s. That was in a great period.
Not his relatives did.
My uncle, yes.
Yes.
Okay. Your microphone is open. Talk about yourself and your problems and your solutions. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you for having me. My name is Christopher Shuttlesworth. I'm from Chicago. I am the Midwest Regional Coordinator for the National Union of the Homeless and lead organizer for the Illinois Union of the Homeless. But most importantly, I'm a human being, and I have problems just like every other human being. And just talking for those of my brothers and sisters that are unhoused, you know, it's a problem. There's more than enough housing, but we have people dying on the streets every day. So that's part of the problem. And we walk past each other like nothing's happening. And we need help.
Tell us how we can help. And understand something. National Organization for the Homeless. That means people are organizing. And this is our theme. Organize, organize, organize. And tell us how we can help.
Okay. Well, first thing you can do where you are is to organize and to stand in solidarity and develop, and like we're doing here, for example, in Chicago, we're developing what we call survival networks for the homeless here. a platform first where people can live and have some dignity, even though that we're on the streets, right? That's first and foremost. There are other things that you can do as well as far as policy. They have to be changed through policy, through the officials that we elect. They support a lot of, homelessness by privatizing the housing that the people live in, which does what? For example, we have ample enough housing here in Chicago, over 400 buildings and spaces owned by public housing, right? But if you have it privatized, then what does that do? The people who manage these buildings make sure that they stay vacant, which drives up the price for the private sector, which means that people can't afford to live in these housing units, which means what? They're coming to see us. They're going to be on the streets. That can't exist anymore. I drive down the street in my own neighborhood, and I see communities, pretty much blocks, that are vacant. And then I meet new people every day just having this position called the Midwest Regional Coordinator or Lead Organizer for the Homeless. But I meet people that are real, that I meet one day and are dead the next. This cannot happen. I'm a little nervous now because it's just gathering everything to really tell you, you know, the God truth, right? Not what I want to say or what you want to hear, but people are dying, bottom line. And it's because we're exploited every day. People, and what you think of homelessness isn't just the people that you see on the street in the raw. Like here in Chicago, we have encampments that are growing every day, full, 20 here, 30 there, or just on the street, you may just see one tent one day, and then where that one tent is, you may see five, then 10.
Well, my brothers and sisters, are hearing is the calamity of capitalism. It's a calamity for us because there is money in poverty, if you get the meaning. There is money in poverty, and we must have political action. That is, I hope there is a will of the people to change this. And so you have heard one voice, the voice from Chicago, telling us what is happening in Chicago. And I tell you, my brothers and sisters, it is happening all over this America. Every major city, there is a drive to privatize everything. Privatize the schools, to take away the regulations of public education that have been building since Reconstruction. 1865. We're losing them quickly. We're losing the struggle in the 60s for public housing. And we haven't been able to politically arouse the people to say, no, that's what this program is about. We're saying no. And we see generations of people who have studied, struggled. Shuttlesworth, you all know that name from work with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in the South. Reverend Shuttlesworth, I believe, speaking out against injustices, and now we have the next generation, Christopher Shuttlesworth, speaking out against injustices in housing. Thank you for that, Brother Shuttlesworth. Is Joe Peary on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
Would you like to add to that?
All right.
I think Chris pretty much hit everything, but what I would add, is that, you know, we go to funerals all the time. I mean, we've lost maybe four of our best organizers to the street. They died on the street. We got to check our own mental illness. It looked like for instance, this winter so far, we've been to like four, funerals of people who, you know, some of them were members and some of them were one of them was one of our organizers. But still, I mean, so what we're organizing about is, okay, so we're fighting to get the housing. That's why we backed Brandon Johnson. Brandon Johnson has a plan to house the homeless. He's the only one of the candidates that was. That's why we backed him. And we various aldermen, I guess in your town that would be like a councilman or something, but here we got aldermen. And various of them also backed us. We made sure they won their election as well. And I was going to send you a video. I couldn't find it. I'm going to send it to you later. But we actually had organized where the city under Lori Lightfoot was trying to kick homeless people on the street on the coldest day of the year. It was 20-something below zero. And she's going to throw them out of their tents onto the street with nowhere to go. So, of course, we all went down there. Brandon Johnson, who's currently got elected mayor, he came with us. And various of the people who were running for office, and these regular people like you and me, they ran for office because they was tired of it. And we went down there and stopped the city from putting them folks out of their tents. And so now that Brandon is in there, we're going to have to prepare to fight a war. That was just the start getting him elected because these real estate companies are going to be coming down on folks like a ton of bricks because our intention is to tax them. It's called Bring Chicago Home. We're trying to get ordinance passed. Bring Chicago Home, where I think it's a 1.9% tax, one-time tax, on all real estate transactions over $1 million. And they don't even want to pay that. You know, these people are already rich, got more money than the law allowed. And so our motto is this, basically, that it ain't enough for us to fight for housing right now. We got to make sure that our people survive to get to housing. In four funerals we went to this year since, October or November, we've been to four funerals. Them four folks that ain't going to never be in housing, they're gone. They're done. So that's part of what we face here.
Well, thank you so much for that. And people understand this. The National Union of the Homeless. They are homeless, helpless. We must continue to support organizations. 35,000 members across the United States. We could go into it. Check with us, and we will get some of these things up on a separate website of organizing. And so support those who are struggling to help themselves. Thank you, Brother Peary. And thank you, Brother Kettlesworth. There will be more to come in the following weeks on our program. Do you want to say anything else?
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you very much for
being on the
us.
Program.
And those of you who want to know more details about how they are organizing this national union with several chapters across the country, please tune in next Wednesday on WBAI at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Central Time, to hear this presentation in more detail. Because if they hit you, you must strike back. And I'm proud to know these two warriors because they are fighting back. They are uniting and fighting back. And this is just a precursor to what you will learn about strategies for organizing the homeless.
And we need this organization in New York City because as you, my brothers and sisters in New York, know, they are privatizing public housing in New York, and we must beat it. Thank you so much for that, Sister Betty.
And New York City has the highest number of homeless per 100 than any other state in this country. So if anyone needs to have a national union for the homeless, we need to join it. Without further ado, we're going to take one of our comrades who's calling in from a distance before her link wears out or goes off. Comrade Julia Reich, your mic is open.
Thank you, Sister Betty. Can you hear me?
Oh, very clearly.
Wonderful. Okay, so I will go back to George Floyd because it seems that there is an agenda to delete George Floyd's murder and what took place in our country afterwards. So George Floyd is important. What happened in 2020 is that the brother of George Floyd went to the United Nations and there took place an event that was buried that was deleted from our Black history, sort of, because all 54 African states, members of the UN, had drafted a letter saying they wanted the United Nations to investigate racism and police brutality directly on American soil. That was beautiful. All 54 African states are with Burkina Faso in the lead. Of course, the resulting resolution was not that letter. The resulting resolution was a bit different. Let me say, watered down. However, was born of that an organization called, and I will name it for you, BERT Mechanism on Law Enforcement and Anti-Black Racism in the United Nations. And it's called EMLER, E-M-L-E-R, for short. And EMLER is sending a delegation of 3 members to Atlanta on April 26th to hear the cases of our most vulnerable political prisoners. That is Kamal Siddiqui, Bowers, Rochelle Magee, Al-Amin, and Ed Poindexter that Anne has just told you about. Also, Mumia's case and the assault against the Uhuru movement and Major Tillery in Pennsylvania as well. So here are a few reasons why this may be an important event if we handle it well. One of the members of the delegation is none other than Mr. Juan Mendez, who was the former rapporteur on torture, who declared that solitary confinement is torture after 15 days. He is the one. He will be in Atlanta. 2, it's interesting to note that since the EMLER was set up after George Floyd's murder, that delegation will be right next to Cop City on April 26th. Their hearing will be held in Atlanta City, and they will be near Cop City. Cop City being built because the police union and the police world nationwide, I would say, want to delete the memory of George Floyd and make sure that the post-George Floyd protests will not happen again. So another reason why this EMLER delegation in Atlanta could be a very interesting event if we handle it properly is that they will be hearing the cases of our political prisoners spanning from the 50s, I think Rochelle Magee was 1955, to the 80s, all elders today. And that will be in juxtaposition to the new generation of eco-political prisoners who are held for charges of domestic terrorism. So on April 26th, as the cases of the older generation of political prisoners will be heard, there will be in the death camps the new young prisoners, and I am hoping the delegation will go to visit them. If not, please put pressure on them to do so. And finally, it's just so obvious that by hearing these cases on American soil, the category of political prisoners will be upheld and rendered more visible on an international platform, whereas our government wants to turn them into invisible men. So here is the address where our press and our supporters can go. The hearing will be held on the Wednesday, April 26th, at the Auburn Avenue Research Library, Auburn like the hair, and that's in Atlanta, between 1:50 p.m. and 2:50 p.m. That's only 1 hour. It's 3 minutes per prisoner. Registration via Zoom and in person will be posted. So I just wanted to end with a very short poem, if you would allow. Yes, here it is.
Go ahead.
Yes, a few lines. French Spring. Ah, don't you hear? Loud and clear, arriving on our shores, carried by the winds, the pounding of pots and skillets, mingling with the beat of drums, so deafening that politicians are muted. Don't you hear the revolutionary spring in France? Listen. The people's orchestra is a wondrous weapon. The lids of saucepans become symbols. YouTube is taking the threepenny opera of Knives and Forks down, so hurry to enjoy. Ha, don't you hear? From wide open windows and a tale of many reverberating cities, so many angry, hungry kitchens drumming to the tempo of a whole people saying no.
Well, thank you so much for that. And understand the collection or the connection of worldwide oppressed people is very important. And would you tell us how this is going to be posted and how we should look for this posting?
We will send this to all the websites, all the Mumia websites. We will send it to Jericho via Ann Lam as soon as we get the information.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. And as we see, the struggle continues. And we have our next caller who has been struggling for a long time for the BIBC, Sister Lisa Davis. Your microphone is open.
Hello. I just wanted to call to, of course, show my support to your show and all the work that you're doing. We know we have a lot of work to do. I will certainly be making my call to support political prisoners. We want to have, and I will give more information about this, we're trying to plan in Newark for a fundraiser and the showing of the documentary Dope is Death. but I will get back to everybody with that information, with all the details. That will be on May 7th. And I just want to say to the people, we got to continue to fight, and we got to make some changes. We must make some changes, one of them being getting rid of this Democratic Party and this Republican Party talking bullcrap. It's not serving any of us at all, and we've got to get rid of that. We're here because of the fearlessness of our freedom fighters. And, you know, that's the trajectory that we must continue along.
Well, thank you so much for that, Lisa Davis. And we have a call from Cleveland, 4963. Would you like to say a word or two? Cleveland, 4963. Okay. Let's move on.
All right. As you know, we have other people who are part of our political prisoner network and support system. We're going to open up the mic of our brother Gil, who has not been well of late, and we're so glad he's back with us again. Brother Gil, your mic is open. New York support for Mamia Abu-Jamal. New York Coalition supporting Mamia Abu-Jamal. But he supports all political prisoners. I'll never forget when we had to march and the banners, we had these huge banners in support of Lynn Stewart and her freedom. Gil was one of those that helped me carry that banner. Your mic is open.
Yeah, so Monday, April 24th, is Mumia's 69th birthday. So we've been planning for a while to have a event on Saturday in the Lower East Side and Sunday in Northwest Philly for that. But a little over 2 weeks ago, on March 31st, Judge Lucretia Clemens continued the tradition of the Mumia exception in denying the current appeal of Mumia's case based upon six boxes that evidence that were discovered by Philadelphia District Attorney and released by Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner over 3 years ago. It took us 3 years just to get to this point, and without looking at the new evidence, and I say discovered, you know, in quotes, really it was found underneath tables and chairs in a storeroom. So the evidence was suppressed and not shared against the law. It's evidence not only of Mumia's innocence, but of the judicial and police misconduct in the suppression of this evidence and failure to share it, as was supposed to be done in Mumia's original trial and subsequent appeals. And her ruling makes even less sense because she says that the issues, that the evidence had already been litigated, which makes no sense because obviously this evidence was suppressed and hidden for decades. You know, of course we're going to appeal again, but it's clear that Mumia supporters need to take to the streets, as we've done for decades, to pressure the system of political repression. When we fought, we win. Some of our prior victories by marching, by calling, by putting pressure on elected officials and prison officials and the Supreme Court and others, we got the overturning of his death sentence. We want his release from decades of solitary confinement, and as well as access on several fronts to better health care, not just for Mumia, but for thousands of other prisoners, because his case became the basis for other prisoners getting those rights. We can't rely on the injustice system of the U.S. global empire to do the right thing on its own. We have to go out in the street again. So, this Saturday, Lower East Side, April 22nd, in the afternoon from 1 to 4 p.m. at the 5C Cafe on the corner of 5th Street and Avenue C. We're having a demonstration in Manhattan. I hope you can join us there. The next morning, Sunday, April 23rd, we're going to have a bus boarding at 17th Street and Union Square East, which is 4th Avenue below 14th Street, turns into Union Square East for three blocks and then becomes Park Avenue South. Across from the park, there's a taxi stand on the northbound lane right in front of the Dunkin' Donuts, and we'll be there at 9 a.m. boarding a bus down to Philadelphia. You can book a ticket on that bus if you want online by going to bringmumiahome.com and following the link to purchase a ticket online. If you don't want to do it that way but you still want to join us, or you can't afford the $40 and need a scholarship, you can call the Free Mumia Abu Jamal Coalition hotline, 212-330-8029, and leave a message, and we'll get back to you and figure out how to get you on that bus. And if you go down to Philly directly, you can join the rally there outside the One Art Community Center at 1431-39 North 52nd Street in Philadelphia, 19131. And that's from noon to 3 on Sunday, April 23rd.
Well, thank you so much for that, Gil. And people should know the government's intent is to stall this case until our brother Mumia is dead. That's why we call them death camps, for all of those who would dare to resist. That's all it takes, dare to resist. And we must resist and fight this. Thank you for that, Gil. Sister Betty.
Gil, before you go, I want to say that the new abolitionist movement will donate $200 toward scholarships for people who are not able to afford the ticket to Philly. Once again, the new abolitionist movement will donate $200 toward that.
Thank you. And you've always been there over and over again, so thank you.
No, we thank you. We thank you. Without further ado, we're going to go to our comrades from the Midwest. Brother Sierra, your mic is open. Thank you for coming back.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm going to give some updates real quick here. Derek Chauvin, on last week, the Minneapolis Court of Appeals on Monday, which was April the 10th, upheld the most serious murder conviction against former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin for the killing of George Floyd. Derek Chauvin is serving a 22-and-a-half-year sentence on second-degree murder. His attorney had asked the appeals court to throw out the ex-officer's convictions for several reasons, including the massive pretrial publicity killing. He also argued that legal and procedural errors deprived Chauvin of a fair trial. Prosecutors say Chauvin got a fair trial and just sentence. That was the conclusion of that. Ralph Yarl, age 16, shot by racist Andrew Lester, 85 years old, a white supremacist, rang the doorbell. Lester shot straight through the glass door, hitting young Ralph Yarl in the head, then firing again, striking Ralph Yarl in the arm, telling young Yarl not to show up here again. Yarl runs for help at neighbors of Lester's, two of which rendered no help, turned their backs on him. A third, in my opinion, did not help, telling young Yarl to put his hands up and lie on the ground. Then let's talk about, now this happened on Thursday, April the 13th. Andrew Lester, not arrested. Andrew Lester, that same night, was allowed the whole weekend, and he turns himself in on yesterday, the 17th, Monday. Lester, with first-degree assault and armed criminal action, not attempted murder, and given a $200,000 bond, which is $20,000. That's sad, but that's what we face. Jalen Walker, Akron, Ohio, shot dead by 46 bullets that riddled his body by eight killer Akron Police Department cops, who were, as stated by the grand jury, justified in the killing. Now, the hunting of black skin is ever, ever prevalent. I don't never think our government. I think the government, That's what we are. Government of oppression, the government of white supremacy. Rules for white supremacy. A friend of mine wrote this, and I'll make this quick. I'll give you 6 points, and then we'll move on. Never let blacks know what you're thinking. Intentionally mislead them if you must. Always try to figure out what they are thinking, planning, so you can disrupt it or capitalize upon their genius. Always appear to be friendly and humanitarian. Never appear to be aware that you belong to or identify with the race that rules. 4, look for blacks and sure cause. This is never difficult, as most of them identify with their oppressors. 5, use religion to gain their confidence. They are religiously immature people. Historically, when we endorse their gods, it opens up an opportunity for exploitation. They tend not to think clearly under the influence of religion and have a natural inclination to care about other people more than themselves. 6, and then I'll continue this next. Remember, no
thank you so
say,
for that, Ed Sierra. Reminding us.
This was the final point. Always remember, no matter what they say or do, to keep your dignity, never forget that you belong to the white race that rules, but never profess this as it is part of the political immature white person to let black people know that they are in charge. I want to also say that go to Hands Off of Huru. Volunteers, you know the assault on the African People's Socialist Party is ever going, and we don't know when the shoe is going to drop on arrest. But we're ruined. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for that, and I'm chuckling because it is real. This is what's happening, and many of us are not aware of it, but thank you one more time to keep us on our toes on how we are to relate to a society that relates to us in that fashion. Sister Betty.
Before we go to Brother Henry Hagan, who's also a member of the organization to Free Mumia, I want to, and Henry has a special presentation for us. I want to open up the mic for Comrade Joel. Joel, your mic is open.
Joel, your mic is open. You have it?
There it is.
Joel, okay, let's go to Comrade Henry Higgins.
And we will come back to you. We'll come back to you, Joel. All right. Brother Higgins, we've been
Sister
paying
Betty
attention.
Brother Ralph,
we've been paying attention
to the fact that this month is Jazz Appreciation Month, and it coincides, sadly, but at the same time, we have to appreciate the number of years he was around. The passing of jazz pianist Ahmad Jamal. I can remember with great fondness having grown up on his signature piece, Ponciana. And this comes from the BBC, and it says, acclaimed jazz pianist, composer, and band leader Ahmad Jamal has died age 92, his wife has said. The cause was prostate cancer. His daughter, Sumaya Jamal, told the New York Times. Ahmad Jamal was a lifelong friend of jazz icon Miles Davis and influenced a generation of musicians. He was known for his sparse playing style, often placing silence between notes, and critics hailed his less is more dynamics. Jamal, who called jazz American classical music, said during his life that he liked to honor what he described as the spaces in the music. He started his 7-decade jazz career as a teenager in the bebop age of virtuosic showmanship, but his style evolved rapidly. His laid-back approach quickly became influential and commercial success, followed with his 1958 album At the Pershing, But Not For Me, one of the best-selling instrumental records of all time. In a piece written last year to mark the release of some of his unissued records, The magazine, The New Yorker, wrote that in the 1950s, his musical concept was one of the great innovations of the time, even if its spare, audacious originality was lost on many listeners. Jamal's longtime friend, the trumpeter Miles Davis, once said, "All my inspiration comes from Ahmad Jamal." In his autobiography, Davis wrote that Jamal knocked me out of his concept of space. His lightness of touch, his understatement, and the way he phrased notes and chords and passages. This was a sentiment echoed by Herbie Hancock and Keith Jarrett, among others. Even in the later decades, his influence was evidenced with his piano riffs sampled by hip-hop artists including Nas and De La Soul. Jamal won countless awards over his career, including Francis Order of Arts and Letters in 2007. And a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award in 2017. "I'm still evolving. Whenever I sit down at the piano," Jamal said in an interview of 2022 with The Times, "I still come up with some fresh ideas." And I want to just thank Brother Ahmad Jamal for so much over the decades for humanity.
Thank you so much for that. We can't say enough about Golden Age. Never been Golden Age of giants, no less important than the Golden Age of European music featuring Bach, Beethoven, and Mozart. We had them all here. They are passing, but due to the technology of Japan, starting in the early years with the innovations that saved this, a piece of this, and understand less than 1% of the jazz music played in the 40s and 50s and 60s has recorded, but that 1% is with us. And tomorrow night on WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial, we'll be talking to bass guitarist Stanley Banks. We'll be talking to poet Nat Turner, who uses musical phrases that we all know to form his poetry, and others. Guests will be calling in to talk about this golden age of music that has just passed. Tomorrow night, 8 p.m., 99.5 on your FM dial. Sister Betty.
And Brother Henry, we hope you'll call in with that eulogy tomorrow. We'll send you more information about the timing and everything. We sincerely hope you will join us with that tribute to a wonderful creative artist. We're going to try and see if Joel's mic is any better. Joel, are you with us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Well, I was listening to bring up what was discussed in the beginning, but it seems to me that the only expanding housing for people, especially oppressed people in this country, seems to be the prison system. Because everywhere else you look, more and more people are on the edge of homelessness. The government is saying, just a few weeks ago, in several official statements, that most people don't even have $500 to take care of an emergency if it comes up. And you have rents now that are going to thousands and thousands of dollars every month. And very often, these rents are more than one salary can afford. It's one of the things that brings back, really, the necessity for a 16-hour day that we thought we had replaced with an 8-hour day from a labor point of view. But it turns out that the 16-hour day is back, but it's split up, say, in a nuclear family, between two, say, a mother and a father. They both have to work. And while they pay more and more rent just to keep that housing structure and a roof over their heads, their children's heads, and everything else, they get to spend less and less time out of making it a real home because their real home is in some cubicle and not even producing material objects as we used to. All of those jobs are gone. There's practically no manufacturing left, and everything is controlled nearly by a financialized economy. And I think that, you know, we talk about things about, like, you know, we're marching and everything else, but there's something that we had proposed back in 1997 on the Lower East Side, and that was what we call a general rent strike for the entire city. And I think that that's, we have to do more action than just what we consider action to be, like demonstrations, which of course have their place and get the word out and everything else, but to put real material pressure on the oppressor who keeps taking all of this money in. Housing is one of the big channels where they take all of this money in. We have the same housing, but now it costs 6, 7, or 8 times or 10 times as much as it used to cost, and it's something that we simply can't afford to pay. And, you know, if we can't afford to pay it, we might as well organize something so that we stop paying it. We can stop the flow of that money, which is only used to buy weapons, military weapons and journalistic weapons and everything else, fighting a constant one-sided war against the regular people in material terms. And we have to strike back in material terms. So just like labor strike, we withhold our labor until we get a certain advancement, or until until we get power over the industries that we've built and run. A general rent strike is something that would cut off the flow of the parasitic money to those landlords, and it's a way that people can really feel what our strength is, that we are the source of all of the wealth that they have, and that gives them power to use against us, to keep us in our so-called place. But our place should be the place of the people that have built and run the economy. That is, the working class should be in power. And these other people, at the very least, should be made to get a regular job. And for those who refuse and resist to do so, they have to be dealt with in a much rougher way, the way that they deal with the political prisoners here. And they would be, but they are the ones who are the real criminals, because they are using coercive force to rob the rest of the population, from gunfire by the police to imprisonment, to regimentation in the military, to holding our healthcare system hostage and destroying it so that people can't even get healthcare. Interestingly, it just reminds me again of the recent act of oppression that they committed against the railroad workers. They can't even get paid sick pay, and they're the ones that the country depends on to transport all of these things that they're buying and selling at a profit. Recently their neglect has led to the absolute devastation of Palestine, Ohio, and the surrounding area. People are going to be getting cancer like that for years. They were hit with something like Agent Orange. And it was a deliberate act because a train was derailed, but none of that toxic stuff was leaking. And they brought it out and they burned it. I believe one of the officials out there said that we just nuked the town in order to get the railroad moving. All of these things have to be, unfortunately, there was the type of a labor movement that would say, they're not going to get paid sick leave, well, we're going to shut the whole country down. There has to be that combination of labor strikes. And I think probably what's happening today is something like a general rent strike, so that we can actually get the feel of our power, not only to withhold money that we'll pay them when they give slightly better terms or make certain promises, but it's a means that directly takes over the housing that we live in. If that money stops flowing, it can stop flowing permanently. We don't need these landlords to keep their hands in our pocket and to keep robbing us. They don't serve any useful purpose. All the functions that they coordinate to some extent so that they can maintain housing at all could be done at the initiative of the tenants, the people that live there and work there, and that form a collective of the overwhelming majority of the people who right now slave away their entire lives in one form or another, and in the end have nothing to show for it. The only land that they own might be a plot in the cemetery. And this has to be absolutely reversed. Again, people's power is the way. The opposite of people's power is the power of the handful of elite billionaires and trillionaires. But that money and the values that money can buy all comes from the regular people. So that our complicity with them, by not having a general rent strike and by not having a general labor strike across the country, and you could say, well, right now we don't have the organization to pull together such a thing, but that has to be gotten into the air so that more and more people hear about it, and that organization can begin to form as people have the idea of what they actually have the power to do and can by degrees see the power that they have by exercising it, putting it to the real test. And that's what revolution is all about. And until then, the system will be doing very little except intensifying the economic and social pressures on the rest of the people, and to the extent of spreading genocide around the world and enforcing it through the prisons and everything else. But it takes power to break their power that they accumulate through our backs, and we have to use that power by applying what we give them to strengthening ourselves.
For that, Joe, what he is saying, and if I may paraphrase, we must exercise togetherness. That's togetherness in our organizations called unions, which have been destroyed. And to these railroad accidents, we must remember that it was President Joe Biden who told the railroad workers that they could not strike because it would upset the economy. What were they striking for? Paid sick leave. And one of the gentlemen who was involved on the railroads said they use three men to control a train 2 miles long rather than having the proper amount of people involved in our train traffic. And as it turned out, the car that was responsible for the derailment in Palestine, Pennsylvania, had been pulled off the line to fix a wheel and an axle, which was never fixed, and they decided to put it back online because being offline cost the railroad a penny or two. And so we see these things coming to a head. Housing, that is homelessness, union organizing, the few unions left. We're down to 9-8% of labor is organized. And they're looking to dismantle that. And if people don't understand, there's only one thing that can save us. That is togetherness. And when Biden got on the air talking about how the railroad workers cannot strike for paid sick leave, there should have been an uproar, but there was nothing. And since that time, two major railroad accidents. And do the railroad workers have paid sick leave? Answer, no. They were talking about working on it, but you see how these things all come together. Sister Betty.
Before we go, I want to give some of our people who made announcements a chance to say give the announcements briefly again. But 0264, did you want to say a few words before we go to our repeat of our announcements? 948 of the first three digits, 0264. Did you want to say anything? Do you want to make any comments?
Move on. Okay. Thank you for listening.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for listening. So I'm going to ask Brother Gil and then Comrade Ann, Sister Ann, if they would repeat the information. I don't see if Gil, I guess Gil got off. So Sister Ann, you had some announcements that you were making in terms of Poindexter, and I think there were some other activities that you had mentioned. You can repeat your announcements, please.
Okay, for sure. Everybody, please, we're doing an urgent call-in campaign for Comrade Ed Poindexter due to the fact that he recently had his left leg amputated below the knee. All the information can be found at thejerichomovement.com and jerichony.org. So please take the time to make those phone calls, and also please write a letter to Ed. As we say, must be in at least 18-point type. And also, please read the article that was published in The Guardian today about Amnesty International trying to pressure Joe Biden once again to release our dear comrade Leonard Peltier, also another innocent man in prison in bad health. And there is an online petition. There's more than one line on petition you could sign for Leonard. So please do so, and also keep the heat on Biden. Call the White House, you know, Twitter, tweet Joe, you know, you can do these things, and it makes a difference. And also, don't forget, there's two more MIA activities coming up, one here in New York City on April 22nd, this coming Saturday, from 1 to 4 p.m. at Avenue C and Fifth Street. And then on Sunday, if you want to go to Philadelphia with us, we will be leaving from 17th Street and 4th Avenue, which is the northeast corner. Yes, the northeast corner of Union Square Park. Be on time, because they're starting a march in Philadelphia at 11 a.m. So hopefully we'll make it in time to march before we go to the indoor event. Mumia's birthday is April 24th. He will be 69 years young. He has spent 41 plus years of those 69 years in prison for a crime he did not commit. So we really need to get on the move, folk, and we need to really show the people power, because this system tries to teach us that we're powerless, but we are not powerless. As long as they can convince us that we're powerless, they're very content. So let's show them some people power and get out there and do the work that needs to get done so our comrades can finally, finally come home.
Well, thank you so much for that, Ann, because we must admit that we are all complicit in this system. We all participate in this system that we call American culture. Every incident, big or small, depending on what is available, is hyped as grist for the media mill. Every incident is dissected thoroughly from the wrong end, the rear end. Examination from the front of the incident, or the why question that could result in a solution that would call for change, is always avoided like the plague. And my brothers and sisters, remember, complicity by passivity. Complicity by attempting to be a part of and doing nothing. My brothers and sisters, we've come to an end of another program. tomorrow night, 99.5 on your FM dial at 8 p.m. Tune in and participate. We're talking about the age, the golden age of music. We have musicians and artists coming on to discuss the attempt at revisionist history, that all history in America that is taught by the system is revisionist, and music history is no exception. And so let us tune in and hear the real history of our great art form, jazz. 99.5 FM on your dial, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. See you tomorrow evening. Thank you again, my brothers and sisters, for participating. Good night and much love. Much revolutionary love.